It is Friday, July 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. U.S. President Donald Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin meet in Germany. Strong gains are reported in the U.S. economy, and Venezuela struggles with political uncertainty. It's all ahead. U.S. President Donald Trump said Friday he and his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin have discussed various things and anticipates future developments that are beneficial to both countries. The two leaders met on the sidelines of the G20 summit in Hamburg, Germany. The formal bilateral discussion had been overshadowing the larger meeting. I spoke with VOA Europe correspondent Luis Ramirez.
There are no details yet on exactly what the two men discussed. What we do know is that going into the meeting, they treated each other very cordially. President Trump saying that he was honored to meet Mr. Putin. Mr. Putin saying he was delighted to meet Mr. Trump. And so the two committed to engaging in substantive discussions and in moving things forward between the United States and Russia.
Well, this is taking place, of course, as there are a lot of questions that are being raised here in the United States about the Trump administration's connections, you know, possible connections to Russia. This is sort of placed a sort of, kind of a weird slant on the whole meeting.
Well, certainly the expectation was that President Trump was going to raise a number of sensitive issues with Mr. Putin. White House officials said that there was no set agenda that they were willing to share with the media, but that the president would be bringing up any topic that he saw necessary at the time. President Trump was pressed while still in Warsaw at his earlier stop to say whether he would raise the issue of whether Russia meddled in U.S. elections last year. Mr. Trump said that, he made no commitment to raise the issue, simply saying that Russia may have, but we do not know whether that issue was in fact raised during this meeting.
Well, meanwhile, there have been reports of demonstrations in Hamburg, in the German city where the summit is going on. What has that been like?
Well, I'm standing right outside the G20 venue, and you may hear above me helicopters. They are following the crowds of thousands of demonstrators who descended on Hamburg. There's been violence pretty much since Thursday, with police using water cannon to disperse the demonstrators who have at times become violent, throwing bottles and otherwise. And so, Friday, the demonstrations appeared to intensify, with demonstrators setting fire to vehicles. You can hear behind me a great deal of commotion. There's a water cannon right in front of me, and it just doesn't seem to stop. The demonstrators appear to be shifting their strategy, going from calling a one massive march to dispersing throughout the city to try to get in the way of delegations, trying to block access to the venue, G20. And so it's a very, very tense scene. As we speak, right in front of me is going by the motorcade of President Donald Trump. So there's a great deal of commotion in the city as the motorcade heads out of the G20 venue. So the police are bracing for the biggest of the demonstrations on Saturday, when they expect as many as 100,000 anti-capitalist protesters to hit the streets of Hamburg.
That is VOA's Europe correspondent Luis Ramirez reporting from Hamburg, Germany. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Doug Bernard. So, Doug, what's trending?
Well, lots of discussion, including from the president, about the G20 meetings. Looking at his Twitter here, he hasn't tweeted for the last 9 hours. Of course, he just finished up a 2-hour-plus meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin. But he's sending out a number of things. I'm looking forward to my meeting today with world leaders, including with Vladimir Putin. Much to discuss, he tweeted out. I will represent our country well and fight for its interests. But of course, it wouldn't be President Trump's tweet feed without a couple other examples. Here's one. My experience yesterday in Poland was a great one. Thank you to everyone, including the haters, for the great reviews of the speech. But one tweet that's really grabbing a lot of attention, he tweeted this about 9 hours ago. The president tweeted, everyone here is talking about why John Podesta refused to give the DNC server to the FBI and the CIA. Disgraceful. Of course, John Podesta, a Clinton ally, whose emails were hacked and, you know, number of them got out, including his risotto recipe and all this kind of stuff. Well, a lot of people aren't necessarily buying that that's the talk of the G20. Congressman Adam Schiff tweeting out in response, yes, I'm sure that's the big talking point at G20. Not climate change or trade, but why didn't John Podesta give a server that wasn't his to the CIA? Well, now John Podesta is getting in on the act as well. He had sort of a tweet storm, 7 tweets. I won't read them all, but a few of these, well, here we go. Pulled in for a pit stop to see that our whack job POTUS is tweeting about me at the G20. Get a grip, man. The Russians committed a crime when they stole my emails to help you get elected president. Maybe you might try to find a way to mention that to President Putin. So, you know, once again, the president just seems to have a way of knocking himself off message. The meeting, you know, going fairly well so far at the G20, but he just can't help himself, it seems, from sending out these things that become utter distractions.
I'm kind of glad that Twitter wasn't around during the days of the founding fathers. You know, I wonder what they said about each other. All right. Thanks a lot, Doug. That's social media editor Doug Bernard. Here are some of the top news stories trending. The U.S., South Korea, and Japan call for increased sanctions on North Korea. U.N.-sponsored talks in Switzerland have aimed at ending a stalemate in Cyprus have ended without an agreement. At least 10 Egyptian soldiers have been killed in a suicide car attack. And the Chinese view that China is exploring deep seas for science, not sovereignty. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists recently discovered a huge wave of hot gas rolling through the Perseus Galaxy Cluster, some 240 million light-years away. Using a combination of data gathered by NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory and ground-based radio telescope arrays, along with computer simulations, the scientists have determined that this wave of hot gas spans some 200,000 light-years. The researchers say the wave was set off when a smaller galaxy cluster with about a tenth the mass of the Perseus cluster happened to brush by it billions of years ago. The team's lead scientist, Stephen Walker of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center, said that Perseus is one of the most massive of nearby galaxy clusters. It is also the brightest cluster when observed at X-ray wavelengths, so data from Chandra was able to provide the scientists with unparalleled detail. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, the band Imagine Dragons is headed towards its North American tour, and we'll have an update. The U.S. economy posted strong job growth in June with a net gain of 222,000 jobs, while the unemployment rate rose slightly to hit 4.4%. I spoke with VOA Economics editor Jim Randall about the figures.
Well, the key thing that a lot of analysts are taking away from this is that wage growth was not very spectacular. At 2.5% over the past year, that's barely ahead of inflation. That means, as a practical matter, most people are not getting ahead. They're not increasing their purchasing power. By the time you take account of inflation, stuff costs about what it did before, and you're making about what you did before, so you're getting frustrated. It's harder to pay. It's difficult to pay your bills. It's difficult to make any progress.
However, the report from the Labor Department says that wages grew 2.5% in June from the same period a year earlier. Now, on the other hand, I would think that the Trump administration would probably take credit for a gain of these over 200,000 jobs.
Well, sure. I mean, and every incumbent always points to positive economic reports of any sort. I mean, typically, I've been doing this for 12 years, all right? And it doesn't matter what party the president is or who's in office. If it's a positive report, you might see the president talking about it on that particular day. If the economy has just fallen off a cliff, you'll see a minion of the president whose name is not a household name talking about it, or maybe just handing out notes. So this is no different.
Apparently, a PNC Bank chief economist, Gus Fauché, says employers will raise wages when they find it more and more difficult to attract qualified workers. What about that? What about the problems of being able to attract those kinds of people?
A couple of things are going on. One is that every CEO I talk to complains that they can't find the technically literate, the technically qualified people they need for certain jobs. Plumbers, electricians, people who do advanced manufacturing, technical skills, people who graduated from high school and went on to some sort of technical training, probably not college, though. And so there's a lot of jobs are going begging. On the other hand, we've got 7 million people unemployed officially, more than that if you count people who are working part-time who would really prefer to work full-time. The gap here is a training gap. The gap is not enough people are getting apprenticeships, not enough people are going to trade schools to learn how to do these good jobs that pay reasonably well. Many of them come with benefits. Clearly, that's the next step in trying to help people and trying to improve the economy.
VOA Economics editor Jim Randall. At least 12 people were injured this week when armed supporters of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro stormed the National Assembly building, vowing that Venezuelans would continue to fight for the recovery of democracy and freedom in their country. The protesters burst into the building Wednesday during a special session marking Venezuela's Independence Day. 5 of the wounded were opposition lawmakers. The armed gangs left the building but surrounded it for hours, taking hostage at least 112 lawmakers, staff, and journalists. The violent encounter followed 3 months of almost daily street protests, which have led to almost 100 deaths, mostly of civilians. Maduro's foes are angry about Venezuela's collapsed economy and increasingly authoritarian rule. They demand that he schedule democratic elections, release political prisoners, and allow access to humanitarian aid. This weekend on Encounter, VOA's Carol Castiel speaks with Eric Farnsworth, vice president of the Council of the Americas and the Americas Society, and Juan Carlos Hidalgo, Latin American policy analyst at the Cato Institute. She asked Farnsworth to summarize the current situation in Venezuela.
Well, the current situation is, I think, deteriorating by the day. There is a deadline of sorts at the end of July, July 30th, which is the date by which the Maduro government has called for a constituent assembly to rewrite the constitution. And that has added some urgency to the opposition, which is trying to derail that particular exercise as being itself unconstitutional and certainly not supported by the majority of the Venezuelan people. And so you're seeing some increasing political maneuvering from both sides. Meanwhile, the street protests that began in late March have increased almost to a daily basis, not just in Caracas, where much of the news comes from, but across the country. And as you indicated in the introduction, the death toll is going up from the regime forces that are killing protesters. So it's a situation that has the potential to turn into a humanitarian crisis. Indeed, you're seeing thousands of Venezuelans crossing the border on a daily basis into Colombia, into Brazil, into the Caribbean as a means to try to feed their families, find medicine that's unavailable in Venezuela, and get away from the deteriorating security situation. So it's a pretty bad scenario right now. And from my perspective, it seems to be getting worse.
Let me turn to you, Juan Carlos Hidalgo, for your perspective on the current crisis, this political crisis, economic crisis in Venezuela, particularly as we run up to the so-called Constituent Assembly on July 30th, which many do see as a violation of the current constitution.
Indeed. Right now, I think Venezuela is facing the last battle for its democracy. If the clock is ticking, if the Constituent Assembly is successfully installed, it will have the power to remove the National Assembly. It will have the power to remove all other institutions, because the Constituent Assembly will have supra-constitutional powers. So once the Constituent Assembly is installed, it will have the power to remove judges. It will have the power to remove the Attorney General, who has been attorney the side of the regime lately. It will have the power to call off the regional elections for December, which are scheduled to take place in December. It will have the power to call off the next presidential election. So it will be basically the end of Venezuela's democracy. So, and I think that Venezuelans know this, and this is why they have taken the streets. Unfortunately, we don't see any cracks in the regime. Despite some defections, by the most important figure being the Attorney General, we see that the armed forces are completely behind the regime. Of course, we don't know exactly the circumstances, but at least the rank and file of the armed forces continue to support Maduro. And as long as they are firmly behind the regime, it's going to be very difficult for the protesters to make a difference. Let's remember that when people talk about the possibility of a civil war in Venezuela, we have to keep in mind that only one side has the guns. The other side, being the people, are in the streets with rocks, with sticks, shields, but that's pretty much it. And it's a war of attrition. We are talking about 70 to over 100 people killed in the last 2 to 3 months of protests. And the question is if we will reach a point where people are simply going to fed up, realize that they're not making much of a difference and that the regime is moving ahead to consolidate communist socialist dictatorship.
Juan Carlos Hidalgo, Latin American policy analyst at the Cato Institute, and Eric Farnsworth, vice president of the Council of the Americas and the Americas Society. They speak with VOA's Carol Castiel on Encounter. Listen on voanews.com. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondence, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondence, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
This is International Edition. Grammy-winning American rock band Imagine Dragons is wrapping up the European leg of its current tour before heading to North America. As VOA's David Byrd tells us, the group's third album, Evolve, has the band coming from a different place mentally and spiritually.
The members of Imagine Dragons say Evolve came out of a new mental attitude they found after taking a break from a grueling tour schedule. Group co-founder Dan Reynolds says that the break allowed him to refocus on the things and the people that matter most to him.
For myself, I was in a really just scattered, depressed headspace, and I think it just came from losing my sense of self almost to a degree, and all the abrupt changes, and I had dealt with depression when I was young, but it really took on a whole new level and was kind of a full year. So it was out of necessity. Long story short, it was out of necessity, more than even, I think, wanting or anything. It was just, we knew it was necessary to go home.
Guitarist Wayne Sermon says the touring, a 7-year stretch, took a toll, but things are better now.
I mean, the road can be a grind, you know. It feels a little bit like a traveling circus. And, you know, you wake up and you're underground. You have no idea what city you're in. You think you have an idea of what region you're in, and you make your guess from there. But It can be a grind, but I think you do have to put yourself in the headspace.
The time off allowed Dan Reynolds to reconnect with his 4-year-old daughter, and he and his wife had twins. Reynolds says that when they were ready to work on Evolve, they hired Swedish producers Mattman and Robin, who have worked with Britney Spears, Tove Lo, and DNCE.
We started the record working with two Swedish producers, Mattman and Robin, and the reason we chose them, we tried a lot of different producers. The reason we chose them is they were both very opinionated, and they were both very minimalistic. Thunder, feel the thunder, lightning and the thunder. Thunder, feel the thunder,
lightning and the thunder. Thunder, thunder. Dan Reynolds says Evolve is the first album that all members of the group have agreed is a good one, and one they can be proud of. The band starts the North American leg of its current tour in Toronto, Canada, July 29th. Wayne Sermon says they are looking at touring with a fresh perspective.
For us, it's just a matter of sacrificing a certain amount of things in order for 2 hours of your life to be the ultimate high. Like, there's nothing better. Like, cliff jumping isn't as exciting to me as the idea of going on stage and playing for people that, you know, got a babysitter, fought traffic, you know, paid for the extra for parking, and, you know, showed up.
Imagine Dragons Evolve is in stores and available online now. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Thanks very much, David. And that is our show for today. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.